This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Hammer?
Yeah. What's going on, friends?
Man, we are, it's been about 4 weeks since the Sacramento Kings have last played basketball.
Seriously.
They're back on the floor tonight in Los Angeles, NBA Cup action. Hammer, sure sounded like these guys needed those days off.
Yeah, I needed the days off. Forget them. You know, like, I think we're all exhausted. Yeah, I mean, like, look, the grind of the season is always what it is, but this season in particular feels like way too many games in way few days. And, like, you know, again, Mike did the math. I haven't done the math myself, but he said something like it was, you know, 2 years ago was 15 games in 34 days. Last year it was 32 days to get to game 15. And this year you're 26 to get to game 15. And that's just too many games in too many days. And I know people don't want to hear that. You know, it's your job. You're coming off of summer, all that stuff. But it's just a reality, especially for a team who started the entire training camp without two of their eight rotational pieces that, you know, showed up like 2 days before camp started. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 days before the season started.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a lot of games. What do they have, like three back-to-backs in the first 3-4 weeks of the season?
Isn't this the fourth
one? At least.
One? Is this the fourth one coming up or
coming
the third
up,
one?
Yeah, I think.
Because there's one.
The fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
That's
a lot.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man. But, you know, much.
But these damn players and their load management.
Well, and look, to their credit, until, you know, they got hurt, all these guys were playing.
Yeah, they didn't load manage. They just got injured.
These guys were playing. De'Aaron Fox has played, you know, all the games in heavy minutes.
And, big minutes.
I understand them. I miss watching the Kings play, you know, selfishly. I missed the Kings all week long, but I completely understand needing the break. I even completely understand giving them another day before we go to practice. You know what I mean? Like, let these guys get their minds and their bodies right before another little stretch they got to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, this is tough. I mean, everybody plays a similar schedule, but it doesn't always feel that way. And I know people always wonder, like, why do you talk about the travel and stuff? And it's like, man, do people not fly? Do you not, like, does it not take the wind out of you to go from one coast to the next? And, you know, some of these trips they've had, you know, not just 26 days, but tucked into that 26 days was like an 8,400 mile trip. And it's just, it's crazy. This is a very, very difficult schedule to start the season. And, you know, you got to play what they put in front of you, but that doesn't mean that, you know, you aren't going to get hurt, that, you know, when you have a coach that's really relying on a group of starters, I think it probably would have been wise if they would have mapped out what the season looked like before. And I'm sure they did to a certain extent, but it's also possible you're just like, okay, well, we're just going to play the schedule and you get into it. And then you're like, man, it sort of seemed like there's a lot of games, and then you look up and This weekend will be their fifth set of back to backs already. Wow. And you know, just wow. It's not going to stop. Like this is the schedule that they're faced with this season. They've got another one in early December. Like it's tough, but most teams have like 13 to 15 back to backs every year. It just feels like so many of them are early in the season for this for the Kings this year.
Kings are trying to get all theirs in before 2025.
Right. Yeah.
Casey asked me this earlier. What do you think they look like tonight when they take the floor? Rested or rusty?
I'm hoping it's rested and not rusty. I feel like when you have 2 days of practice to game plan for a team, you probably should have a good game plan. You know, this is a team that you've already faced this year. They're missing Norman Powell, who is just been dynamite this year. And so that helps you. They're missing Kawhi Leonard as well, of course, but they're always missing Kawhi. So that's not a new thing. But this is that moment where I think the Kings need to figure out their identity very quickly. And they've got a couple of weeks here building up to like the in-season tournament, like little mini break. So if you're not playing in the in-season tournament, I think that there's going to be, you know, they'll throw another date in the schedule there at some point, I believe. But still, I think this is one of those moments where you see the schedule in front of you and you've got to start making some headway and you got to start building that identity that will last throughout the rest of the season. And I think that identity should feature De'Aaron Fox very prominently.
Yeah. And look, it's that time, like you said. I like how you talked about like this little run before you get another break. You know, let's hit the ground running. I know that we talked about, you know, time to gel and all this other stuff, and understandable. And it kind of got broken up with the injuries, but yeah, it's time to get after it now. We're 15, 16, 17 games into the season. And before you know it, we're 30, 40 games into the season. You're going to need to be above more than one game above 500 at that point. Like, you're going to need to start racking up some wins and stacking up some little runs here. And this is as good as time, Andy, to start.
No, this is it. I mean, this is a moment where, I think the teams in the West, somebody's got to start getting some separation from somebody. Like there's the teams at the top right now that are playing well, but at the same time, we're starting to see a team like Houston start to pick up some momentum, and you're starting to see teams that you were hoping would be the Kings. But I also think there are a lot of teams that are just lumped in with the Kings, you know, that haven't really found who they are yet. And whether it's Denver or Phoenix or Memphis or, you know, the Clippers who they play, Dallas, Minnesota, all of these teams are right around each other. And what you don't want to do is leave a door open for a team like San Antonio to figure it out too. And next thing you know, there's 12 teams vying for six spots in the playoffs. And you're one of those teams that are in the back end looking at a play-in spot. So again, I think LA and Houston have done a nice job lately of building some momentum for themselves to get that 5-6 games over 500. OKC, we knew would be up there no matter what the injuries happen. They just seem to have the depth to deal with it. But at 12-4, they're playing really well. And then, I mean, like, look at, there's going to come a point in the season where we have to look at Golden State and wonder how much is smoke and mirrors and how much is this just one of the great coaching jobs that we've seen from Steve Kerr. And, you know, they're a team that's just marching, and you would hope that the Kings would find a way to get into that conversation as opposed to this giant mix of 12 teams that are at 500 or above in the Western Conference.
How close to the truth would I be if I said you really hate the Golden State Warriors?
Oh, no, I don't hate the Warriors at all. I just, like, when you look at that team,
I think
there's going to be a
good
point where
I think they're playing really well.
No, they are playing really well, but there's a big difference between a team that's, you know, posting what a 700 win percentage now and a 700 win percentage for an 82 game season.
Well, it might not be that extreme, but I think they could be in the mix for a top three seed for sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but at what point, I want to see it play out for a lot more than, you know, 15 games. I'm gonna need a much bigger sample size from that team. And it's not because, you know, like I don't believe in Steve Kerr.
Them.
It's
oh.
Well, no, I mean, like, look, they're one superstar. They're being able to play really reduced minutes. You know, like whether he can hold up for an 82 game season is still in question. But the rest of the players, like, there are some anomalies that are happening there, and you're wondering if they can continue those things, or if again they're finding ways, or they're doing something that teams haven't caught on to yet, and then eventually, you know, most teams they are what they are, and again, if this team is. This is a 55 win team. Number one, I would be completely shocked still, but if they are a 55 win team, then they've earned it. They've earned whatever it is that they're doing. It's working, and it's been able to be sustainable. And then we have to see what it looks like in the playoffs.
I think, I understand what James is saying a little bit. Like I'd be really surprised if they were a one seed going into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That would be surprising, but I'm with you. I think they're a good team. You know, I'm convinced. I thought they were going to be a play-in team coming into the season. They're far from that. I think they're a good team. Like I said, even with the way they started, they ended up the one seed. I'd be like, man, I thought they might fall off a little bit as the season went along. But I'd be really surprised. But I think they're a top four team at this point for sure, though.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, they might be. They might be by the end of the season.
I like them more than Minnesota. Well, I know that.
Minnesota,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
That looked crazy. We didn't talk about that last night.
That was the Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, that was
wild.
Wow.
Anthony Edwards looked like he wanted to kill his teammate on the floor.
I know we talk kids, but whose fault is that? A lot of people are like, Julius Randle, you're at fault. Give him the ball. Like he's got a little dude on him. He's under the basket. Give him the ball. You're right, but yeah. Rudy can't go sulk and walk through the lane and get a 3 second call there.
Yeah, I'd probably put more of it on Rudy than Julius. Yeah. I mean, James, you tell me, post players, they know you've got to move. You can't stay there. And he had position. Julius missed. He had position, but you can't cry about it.
Right.
You're in one of the most sensitive spots on the floor. Like you can't do that. You can't be a shooter who didn't get the pass. You can go sulk in the corner and it doesn't affect you. Mm-hmm. You can't do that in the key.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's an internal clock with all of these players. And when you get into the key, there's only so much time you can spend in there. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it tonight. Zubats is going to spend, Zubats is three in the key, like merchant. That's all he does. He's in the key all the time because he can't defend anyone on the perimeter. So you're going to see it tonight, and I hope that Sabonis steps out and makes him pay. It's just one of those things. Like certain guys, that's sort of their game, that they hang around the key. And Gobert is one of those guys too. He knows he's not a great defender away from the key, and even on the offensive side, it's not like he can do anything that isn't right at the rim. So, I mean, he's very limited, but to have him hang around the key like almost intentionally, that's probably not a good look.
Them calling 3 seconds was hilarious.
Oh, that was incredible.
Called 3 seconds on that man. And then Ant, like you said, Ant was like, what the hell are you doing?
And he didn't say it once. Like, he looked back at him after he had stopped yelling at him like he wanted to beat his ass. That was a crazy, that was a crazy sequence.
That moment is, like, in Minnesota, B-Lo and JC and Bames Bam. Out in Minnesota.
Insider.
It's a serious situation for them because that was indicative of a lot.
Yeah.
Like that moment said a lot.
That's indicative of Rudy Gobert's career.
His career. Julius Randle's career a little bit too. Because I think Julius, I don't know what Julius was doing. He should have gave him the ball.
You can run that clip of Julius and then the clip of Julius against the Kings, and that's probably Julius' career. There's that.
And then, did you guys see the one at the end of the game? Where he gave Rudy the ball underneath and Rudy fumbles the ball and Julius is just kind of like shaking his head, soaking his shoulders.
So I didn't pass your sorry ass the ball the first time anyway.
That's exactly what he said. But it's all encompassing of a big issue with them, and we got to give a shout out to Jesse. Like I don't know if that team going to make it.
Mm.
Like I think they might be a playing team, but I definitely don't think they're going to be a top six. They're not. I'm starting to worry if they turn this around to be the team that we saw last year. I don't think that happens.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't believe I've never been a big Julius Randle believer. I just like his style of play is a little off, and you know, if it makes sense that him going to Minnesota would mess some things up, at least initially. They might work through it though. You never know. Like I mean, I think it's, you know, we're still waiting for the Kings to work through some of the rough patches here.
We saw you mentioned L.A. earlier. The Lakers' 6-game win streak came to an end.
Man, oh man,
AD had a monster game, but
overshadowed.
Missed two free throws at the end. One would have made it a 3-point game. Both would have ended the game. And your boy,
man,
Franz made him pay. Franz had 37 last night.
Yeah, that boy Franz is going crazy.
37, 6, and 11.
He's been going crazy since Paolo went out. Man, player of the week.
That's right.
Yeah, he's a good ball player. Yeah, he's beat it out. Yeah. I mean, like, look, I don't know what LA is going to be at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the Lakers are going to be. I don't know what, like, realistically, outside of OKC, and OKC is the one team that's been just battered with, like, major, major injuries. Like, I really didn't know what they would, I figured that they would be the one team that we kind of knew what they look like. And I'm pleasantly surprised with what Denver's doing. I think Denver's playing, you know, a little bit better than I expected early on. But I don't even know, like, any of these teams, what do you expect? You know, can you kind of figure that Luka and the Mavs are going to, like, sink back down to the bottom of the Western Conference and
let's
back
hope
up
so.
To the, yeah, yeah. Like, all of these teams are like wildly inconsistent, except for they're wildly inconsistent at plus 500. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen next for so many of these teams in the West.
Yeah,
right
and
now.
The Kings are one of those teams, which is, and you brought up San Antonio, who's sitting at 8-8 right now. I mean, even Portland is 6-9, but the Kings at 8-7. And I don't know if it's real or if it's not. It felt like, I don't know. I thought there was something there with that second Phoenix win. And I thought, the one that DeMar went, like, maybe this is kind of the beginning of finding yourself here a little bit. And then they wind up having to play without DeMar in the Minnesota game. Obviously Malik is still out. De'Aaron does what he does, but they wind up taking the L there. And I feel like tonight, Hammer, is a game where the Kings are just kind of like starting over again and trying to find who they are as a basketball team.
Yeah, you're hoping that that isn't totally what they're doing. What you're hoping is that Sabonis will integrate in, you know, like seamlessly, because that should be easy. But also that DeMar will find a way to, I want to say, fit in a little bit better. Like, I think he's been really good. I don't want to take away from what he's done. But when he's on the court, their, you know, shooting percentages drop, assist rates drop. And when he's off the court for a couple of games, all of a sudden the Kings, you know, jump up 4% in 3-point shooting. Their assist numbers skyrocket. They've got, what, three of their highest 3-point output games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, he needs to figure out, like, this isn't about the Kings learning how to play with DeMar. It's, some of it is still, like, DeMar needs to learn how to play Kings basketball, and that's okay. I mean, we're talking about a 35-year-old who's like ingrained in what he does, and there's a huge value to what he brings. But I also think that there has to be a more fluid look to getting him in and out of these looks, like, just with more continuity with the rest of the group. And, you know, that takes time. And this isn't me like calling out DeMar DeRozan for doing something wrong. I don't think he has. This is just like a team learning how to play with each other still. And I think sometimes, like, stepping away for a couple of days and getting a 3-game break and watching how good De'Aaron Fox is, like, from a front row seat, that might help. That might help this process, because at a certain point as an NBA player, when you reach a certain age, you should be looking to push forward some of the young guys and having them ascend into the role that you once had. And that you now need them to help you continue to win games as a pro. And I think that this little break here might have allowed DeMar, like, a little different point of view on De'Aaron and just sort of the potential that he has, and how that should be probably, like, getting the most out of De'Aaron Fox should be what every other player on that team should be looking to do, because that's your pathway to like contender status. I don't know that there's a better or an easier pathway than for De'Aaron Fox to be electric. And so I'm hoping that the team sees kind of like what the way I see it. Maybe they don't, but that's kind of what I'm hoping.
You know, obviously the Kings play in Los Angeles tonight against the Clippers. But one of the things on the horizon, I think Matt George was saying starting on Sunday, maybe 13 of their next 20 are at the Golden 1 Center. And we talk about establishing home court and all that, and I only bring this up because I got the standings in front of me. In the top 10 teams in the Western Conference right now, all are above 500 at home, and the Kings are 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that's the last hurdle for them to
look at the one below.
Yeah, it's crazy. Even the Spurs are handling business.
The Spurs are 7-3 at home.
I mean,
they got 8 wins.
There's 1, 2, 3. There's 2 teams that are below 500, the 2 worst teams, and only one other team is 4-4. That's Portland. Everybody else is above 500 at home in the Western Conference, and this is going to be obviously we'll talk about it more throughout the weeks. But this is a big stretcher. This is a big spell. Like, I think that's the next and maybe final chapter to getting to another level as a franchise and as a team is establishing Golden 1 Center as home court advantage with the win-loss record.
I agree. I mean, this is like Alvin Gentry just would scream. Like he just could not,
not giving
understand
up.
It.
Oh, screaming like, something else.
He could not understand how this team played so poorly at home. Mm-hmm. I don't get it either. Like, this is it's typically a great crowd. You know, again, I just keep pointing out, like, the numbers are low this year. Like, every night there's about 2,000 seats that are empty, which is surprising.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Interesting to me, and it might be, you know, the state of inflation, the state of, you know, just people's pocketbooks right now, you know, state of, you know, ticket prices. You know, whatever it is, you know, they're drawing around like 16,000 to 16,400 fans every night, as opposed to like a max capacity of over 18,500. And that's a little strange. And like, I think ticket prices are probably, I see it in the chatty house, that ticket prices are probably a problem. But I also think that like people usually find a way. This should be a hot ticket in Sacramento. And I think it's a warm ticket, but it's not like a super hot ticket. And like the Kings need to figure that out too. Like their home court advantage, just as players, like I've never been able to understand how they don't do better. And I know they have been, although I'm not sure if they did it today, they have been shooting at home on their home court during like shoot around. But, you know, you've got to figure out why is it that you can't win at home? Even, you know, again, 2 years ago, they won 48 games. They won 25 on the road, so 23 at home. It's just, that's not good enough. That's not what a 50 plus win team does. And it's really hard to get the 50 plus wins if, you know, like 28 to 30 of those don't come at home.
We'll come back. We'll talk more with James Hamm as the Sacramento Kings return to the floor tonight in Los Angeles to take on the Los Angeles Clippers, who they hit a world record low percentage of threes the last time these two teams played. So we'll talk to Hammer about that when dealing with Casey. Return here on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320. Par for the course, James. Par for the course, man. We have the Clippers tonight, and they were awful against the Clippers at the Golden 1 Center. And obviously it was the game where they shot terribly, but I was telling Kenny earlier, one thing that really stood out to me in that game was it felt like when they realized the shots weren't going to drop, they slowed kind of to that Clipper pace, that Ty Lue pace, where things like really slow down. And that's where the Clippers they were able to get one. Oh, they were able to get two, and they weren't playing at a high clip. They just were able to hit a few shots when the Sacramento Kings weren't. And I felt like the Clippers kind of dragged them down into playing their style of basketball. And I guess it could be as simple as the importance of hitting shots, James, but I don't feel like the Kings can get dragged down like that again tonight at the Intuit Dome.
Yeah, I mean, the deal with the Clippers is that they have these really long athletic wings that can defend De'Aaron, they can defend DeMar, and they kind of gum everything up. I would say that I think the Kings are a little bit different today than they were, when they lost that game. Over their last four games, the Kings are they're hitting 16.5 threes per game. They're shooting 43.4% from three over their last four games, and their offense is starting to crank. And that was even without DeMar DeRozan for part of those games and DeMontis Sabonis for part of those games. And to me, that's just a good sign. We're waiting for the Kings to step up and start hitting their threes. And really, like, the next two games after the Clippers game, they weren't great against Phoenix and San Antonio, but still they're shooting close to 40% since that game from three. Mm. And it's on, 37, 38 attempts per game. So I think maybe they've turned a little bit of a corner, but this is a difficult matchup because of those, because of Derrick Jones Jr., because of Terrence Mann and just that athleticism that they have and the defensive players that they have.
Yeah, and you've got guy Norman Powell who usually give you a problem, but they're out now. But James Harden is actually, playing some decent basketball. He's not killing, but he's playing some decent basketball. And then they have guys like Coffey, like Terrence Mann, like Kevin Porter Jr. It's a real scrappy group, and I agree with D'Lo when he says this. They are well coached. Like, Ty Lue knows what he's doing out there, and he knows how to get the best out of what he has. So you already know, if you're playing them, you've got to come ready to play. You've got to come ready to execute the things that you need to execute, because they'll take advantage if you're sluggish or if you're not crisp in what you're trying to do because of a guy like Ty Lue leading them.
Well, yeah. I mean, his bench is incredible, too. He's got Jay. What's that?
He got Jeff Van Gundy on the bench.
Yeah, he's got Larry Drew. He's got Jeff Van Gundy. He's got Brendan O'Connor. He's got Brian Shaw. He's got Dante Jones. Like, he's got a very, very good bench. Mm-hmm. A defensive, a group of really bright minds around him as well. That's a heck of a coach, and that's a really well-coached team. And they went out and they got the types of players that they thought that they needed to surround Harden and Kawhi whenever he's back. Whether they're good enough to, win 50 games a season, I don't know. That would be asking a lot of James Harden, who doesn't seem to really have that in him anymore to be like a 30-plus point per game guy on a nightly basis. This team has an ability to gum things up against the Kings. We talked about it the last time they played this team about how, they have two defenders that can match up with De'Aaron Fox and DeMar DeRozan, and not very many teams do in the league. So, again, look at the Timberwolves, who have Jaden McDaniels, but then they don't have another guy that can really be that impactful on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. And this team has two. And, I don't think that those are elite players as much as I think that they're very, very good defensive players that just sort of counteract what the Kings are best at. And Sabonis is like historically not had great games against Zubats. Mm-hmm. He's just a huge man and he's tough to push out of the key. And so the three guys that you're counting on to score typically have really strong defensive matchups for the Clippers. And you hope that someone else steps up and plays well. And you hope that like you get some residual like strong play from guys like Keon Ellis, guys like Trey Lyles, guys who have found themselves over the last couple of games because they've been forced into like a bigger role and sort of had to find their games. And then what does that look like when you're able to play them, you know, 18 to 22 minutes as opposed to 30 to 40 minutes, which is what they've had to do with Trey and Keon over the last few games.
Is that where the Kings can, because you mentioned guys like Keon and Trey, is that because they'll likely be going against the Clippers' second unit and that's a slightly weaker defensive group and that's where you really want to try to make some headway against a good defensive team like LA?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I also think it's just that, like, look, the Kings, their second unit has not been good this season, and whether Malik was there or not, there was still, like, they were trying to get those guys jump-started. And by having to play major minutes because DeMar and Demonis were out, and even for that matter, Malik Monk has been out, by forcing those guys out there, what you did is you kind of woke them up. And so I think that if Mike's going to run an 8 or 9 man rotation, like those three guys coming off the bench have got to be playing, you know, and a good portion of this season, you know, Keon Ellis played 10 minutes a game before and had zero shot attempts, and he's had really, really low like shot attempts throughout the season. But you're hoping that maybe this like lit a fire under him a little bit. Again, Trey didn't look like himself for the first like 10 games of the season. The last five games, I think Trey Lyles has been really good. He's rounded himself into shape, and now what you have is sort of a fully engaged and like in great shape Trey Lyles, ready to take a lesser role. So whatever energy you were using for 40 minutes, I don't need all of that. I need that in 22 minutes. So when you step on that court, you better bring it. And I think they're just in a better position to find success at this point because they're in a rhythm and they're playing better.
And we talk about the rest as well and the time off. And James, if you listen to James Hamm on D'Lo and KC or listen to him on the Insiders, you know, probably the one person that needed the rest the most was Keegan Murray. And, you know, we get to see him hopefully getting his legs under him. And, you know, and it could be one of those things where, you know, it's almost like you get tired one time and then you're never affected by it again. You know what I mean? Like it hits you like a ton of bricks at first and you're like, oh man, I'm exhausted or whatever. And then your body and your wind and all this other stuff, you get used to it. I'm hoping that's what we see from Keegan, man. I'm hoping we see the start of that tonight with him down in LA, getting his second legs for the rest of the season.
Yeah. I really, as much as he needed like a physical break, I think Keegan just needed a mental break too. Mm. Like he just needs to take a deep breath, you know? You're always, when you come into a season, I think every player has like these expectations of who and what they think they should be moving forward. And, you know, you're hoping that your players set goals for themselves and they're trying to get better each off season. And then when the season starts and all this work you put in and you're shooting 28% from three, like nobody is taking that harder than Keegan Murray. Like he knows he's a great shooter. He knows that the Kings rely on him to be a shooter. And he knows that at a game like tonight, we keep talking about, you know, or I keep talking about Terrence Mann and Derek Jones Jr. Well, look, if Keegan Murray is firing away and averaging 18 to 20 points per game and having a great start to the season, one of those guys could have to shift over and defend him for points of a game. Mm. And that's just not happening. And so as opposed to you maybe allowing, you know, a DeMar DeRozan or De'Aaron Fox a bit of a break and one of these other great defenders defending Keegan, that's not really materialized yet. And look, Keegan knows he's got to be better. And you know, again, frustration, you can just see it on his face the whole time. And yeah, people, like, we had somebody call in and thought he looked disinterested. Like, there's never been a time when Keegan Murray was disinterested in basketball. He's a basketball lifer, is what he does. Like, if there's one thing about Keegan that they're worried about is that he doesn't have enough stuff outside of basketball that They want him to play golf. They want him to find other things. And so he's not just there working every single day. So he can be a more well-rounded human being. And so when things go wrong on the basketball court, it's tough because if you don't have something else to turn to use as advice and kind of figure out how to get through something, then, you know, it can spin out of control because if basketball is it, that's your primary focus. It's really tough when things go wrong.
Is there a key to, like, I know it's an overused term, unlocking him, so to speak? It feels like every time we think like Keegan may have turned this corner about, you know, kind of taking that next step as a player, particularly on the offensive end, he's obviously phenomenal on the defensive end. But is there something, like, everyone will point to the six shot attempts and so on. Is there something that you got to do, got to say? Like, why does it feel so up and down on the offensive end for Keegan?
Yeah, I think part of it's opportunity. Part of it is, you know, when somebody is rolling, Keegan's not someone who wants to raise his hand and say, hey, no, I need my shots too. I also think there are times where, just like Keon, where you just kind of get locked in and you're watching a little bit and you know that you're not the primary focus. And so you allow yourself to take a little bit of a back seat. And it's what we saw from Harrison Barnes too, right? Harrison Barnes just kept trying to be a good teammate. And by being trying to be a good teammate, he was actually being a bad teammate on the court. He just kept shrinking. And that's not what anyone needed. You know, you're talking about it like a career 38, 39% three-point shooter. Like, man, hoist it. Like, what are you doing? Like, you're the one guy who can get to the free throw line all the time. Go take the ball to the basket. Like, you can't just, like, all of a sudden go from six rebounds a game to 2.5 or three. Like, there are things that happen when a player feels like maybe they are a little bit left out. And let's be honest, Keegan Murray, through the first, you know, 15 games of the season, on most nights he's been the fifth option with the starting group. Kevin Huerter has had more focus as far as, like, more opportunities and more flow. And it's partially because Kevin is a movement player, where Keegan is not so much a movement player. But that doesn't feel good to be the last guy. And not only that, but, like, the opportunities aren't there. So you're trying to get into a rhythm, but you're not just getting fed the ball again and again and again and being able to shoot into a rhythm. You're kind of always having to fill in and be like the extra guy. And I think Keegan can be more assertive and he can demand that he gets more. But I also think, like, some of the players on this team, they go out there and they do it. They don't ask questions. You know, they're not waiting for someone to tell them. De'Aaron Fox isn't waiting. DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis, you know, like, most of these guys, Malik Monk has never waited for a coach to tell him to do anything. He's just going out there and doing it. So at some point, Keegan has to have that mindset as well, where it's just, you know, I've got to go put my stamp on this game, and he's got to figure out how to do it every single night.
De'Aaron Fox, obviously a historic back-to-back games last weekend. Am, do you think we see that same type of aggressive De'Aaron Fox now with everybody else back, or is it up and down like it was sometimes in the past?
This is going to be the biggest test for the Kings. Like, how do you bottle what we saw for three games? You know, I'll put all three games. I thought Fox was good on Monday too. He hit 28. He didn't get to 40 or
he was good on Thursday too against Phoenix.
Yeah, 29.
Yeah, so again, like, how do you bottle that and say, hey, man, we need that every single night? And I think part of that is, like, the coaches have to keep telling him that that's who he has to be. He has to stop trying to, like, work his way into a game and make sure that he's setting up other people. There comes a point where he needs to be selfish for a stretch. And then by being selfish, that's when he becomes unselfish. Like, when he can start getting to the key at any time against anybody, that's when the entire defense shrinks around him and it shrinks up, you know, and tries to cut him off, and everybody else gets wide open. And that's sort of how I believe this team, like, the road to success is Fox has to be that guy. And again, it doesn't have to be 30. It doesn't have to be 60. But it's got to be like that. There's a threat of him at all times, and that every other team is game planning on how to stop De'Aaron. And if you can get to that point, then you know, the rest of these guys, it just makes their life easier.
I agree.
I'm curious. Cause no. I'm just curious that like, I don't think that was De'Aaron that weekend. I think that was De'Aaron out of like necessity,
no,
like,
super De'Aaron.
Like he could do it.
Yeah.
And like, we've wondered like, would he ever take control of a game like that? I think he's far. I mean, you mentioned the Atlanta game. He was great in the Phoenix game. Mm-hmm. I mean, DeMar missed the second half in that one. Mm-hmm. But DeMar played the first half. You know, Domas played that entire game. He had like 28-10 in that one. Yeah. That to me, that like when we look back at De'Aaron, that's going to be what we're looking at to me. I think that's what he'll be. Like that's like he's going to find guys. He's going to do a lot of different things on the court.
It's okay if that's not fully who De'Aaron is, but if they want to win, that's who he has to be. I mean, like, look, it's uncomfortable sometimes that you have to be that guy and you've got to take that step forward. But, like, that's what basketball is about. Like, that's what being on a team, that's what being the number five pick in the draft is. That's what being an all-NBA player is. That's what getting a max money contract is about. Like, it's not about saying, okay, well, this is how comfortable I am tonight and this is what I'm going to do. Like, no. Like, he should be striving to be something more every single game. And I think he's got it in him. And then he shows us that he can be something that's like out of this world. You can't just shrink back down and say, well, that was just like, that wasn't really me that weekend. It's like, okay, well, then we'll just take your 60 back. You know, that's got to be who he is. Like, you can't just say, well, maybe that's not, you know, I get it. But did he do anything that was out of the ordinary for himself? The only thing that he did was do what he does, but do more of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not like he did the giant 360 spin move. It's not like he was the top of like five guys and dunked on everybody. It's not like he shot, you know, like 13 of 22 from like, he didn't do anything that was out of the realm of who he is as a player. He was just better. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, you know, he was in attack mode the entire time and he hit more shots. But I think that person, that player is just sitting there waiting to like be pushed to do that on a nightly basis. And like, part of it is him and part of it's his teammates. Like, his teammates need to like, look, man, if we're going to win 50 games, that's fine. If we want to compete, if we want to be a contender, then that player that we all got to watch play on Friday and Saturday, that's who we need on our team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree. It's kind of crazy for me to even say this, like hear me saying this right now, but I'm looking at De'Aaron Fox and, you know, I'm expecting when he steps on the court, 27, 28, 29, 30 points in a night. Like that's kind of who he is. That's who he's shown to be when the chips are down. And even in a situation where, you know, it's not even that dire, like the Phoenix game. Like, mm-hmm. he had 29. He had 29 in that game, kind of without even really pushing it. So I know it's not all about the point total, like what you're saying and what we're all saying in here, but I think he is that type of player, that type of scorer. Like, we look at a Giannis, we look at a Tatum, and we say, oh, yeah, he's going to get his 25 to 30. I think we look at that with De'Aaron Fox, and we say, yeah, he's going to get his 25 to 30. DeMar's going to get his. Now we're going to see what Keegan and Sabonis and Monk do. But he's. I say I'm kind of surprised to say it because I didn't know if we'd ever get here with that type of a high point total. But I do believe, like, yeah, he's 25 to 30. That's what I expect to see every night.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is a guy who finished eighth in the league in scoring last year. There's 450 players. Like, you're eighth in the league in scoring. You're elite, right? You're elite and you get passed over. And which is, it's not fair, but it's a reality. And the other thing I would say, we're not asking Keon Ellis to go out there and put up 33 points and go 9 of 15 from three every night. That's not what we're saying. We're asking a guy who's averaged 25, 26 a game for the last two or three years. Like, man, if that's who you can be, then go be that all the time. And we know it can't be 82 games of De'Aaron going for 60, but the threat that he was able to, like, that he put on that game was, like, stunning. And I mean, again, let's just be honest. They lost that game. He scored 60. They lost that game. Yeah. The only reason they were in that game was because he was so tremendous. And watching him move around the court, like, every single eye was on the court. And that's a team who was really good last year. It has a young superstar. Everybody was watching De'Aaron Fox. Mm-hmm. Like, Ant-Man had a great finish to the game and won the game. Nobody was paying attention to Anthony Edwards. Everyone was watching De'Aaron Fox. And that's because he's that good. And, like, I think that's what we're asking is, like, harness, understand that you're that good and show us that all the time. Because even if you're not scoring, if you're making those moves and you're getting to the key, it just opens everything up for everybody else. And it will make everybody on the team way better. Yeah. And because every team is going to start sending a second guy and a third guy at you. And that just means that your teammates are wide open.
Looking up at the TV, and the Countdown crew has the most underrated teams 1 month into the season, and Big Perk said the Los Angeles Clippers.
I think the Clippers are.
Is that a good sign or a bad sign? I don't know.
I think it's just a note that, you know, the Clippers might be a little bit better than a lot of us expected them to be. And, mm-hmm. you know, most of all, James, you know, a lot of talk this week was the rest and Kevin Huerter talking about the rest that they needed and all that. And I think all of them kind of echoed the same sentiments. Well, not only do they have basketball tonight, they have basketball on Sunday against Jordy and the Brooklyn Nets, a very tough Brooklyn Nets team. And then they got the Oklahoma City Thunder on Monday. So when we get back here, we'll be talking about two basketball games that have been played and be preparing for a game that's about to be played. So I hope those days off helped, because there's a lot of basketball ahead. They play, I think, in Minnesota on Wednesday, Portland Friday. It's a lot of basketball ahead for them.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Board a plane from Minnesota to Portland.
Jesus, man.
I mean, like, maybe they'll like serve cranberry sauce on the plane. No, I don't know.
That ain't fire.
Yeah. No, it's tough. I mean, like, look, Jordy Fernandez has that team playing so gritty and so tough, but the Kings should have that identity as well. Like, that team is gritty. They're tough. They're not nearly as talented as the Sacramento Kings. And that's just the honest truth. So if you're going to get beat by Jordy Fernandez, it's because you allowed a team to be more gritty, more physical, tougher than you. Okay. That's on you. The Kings have more talent, and you can't, if you're going to lose a game to San Antonio already, you're going to lose a game to Toronto already, you're going to drop one to what, Atlanta?
Well, San Antonio's 500. About Brooklyn. Yeah, I got you. San Antonio's 500, though. Like, they're,
yeah.
I don't know what they are, to be honest. Like, I'm not, I guess, I think they're a little like the Clippers. Like, they're a team that, the Clippers might be more talented, but they're a team that's, they're going to fight till the buzzer.
Well coached.
Yeah, exactly.
With Pop not there, the young guy's doing a good job while Pop has been gone.
Yeah, hey, you got Harrison Barnes go for 25 and 10 the other night.
Oh, right. ten what?
All right, man. I think he had 10 rebounds.
He did have 10 rebounds. I fell out when I saw that.
Come on, man.
And I think the Spurs won that game. Jeez, 25 and 10 rebounds. That was a weak total last year.
Yeah. This guy would go games with, like, games, multiple, with no rebounds. Now he's just out here, Dennis Rodman out here.
Wimby's out, and Harrison said, I got this.
You got what, Harrison? I'm going to go get all these boards. Shout out HB.
I'm excited to see him. Excited to see him.
Yep. Yeah, shout out HB, man. That was a hell of a performance. All right. Basketball tonight. Everybody feeling good about this?
Feeling good, man. I'm anxious to see the Kings back out there, and I do think they'll be down 13 in the first half.
Well, if nothing else,
I think.
You think so too?
Yeah, double digit win.
Oh,
that's what I'm talking about.
Well, they could be down by 13 and still win by double digits.
I didn't say they're going to lose the game.
They could still win double digits. Make your plans to be with us. And remember, you could always make basketball fun by taking the Tyrese under over on Prize Picks. Take the Tyrese less. Take the Tyrese less on Prize Picks 10 times out of 10 and see if you can walk away with some cash today. You can take that cash over to Sky River Casino, where we will be December 6th. Make your plans to be with us for this mega broadcast. It is starting to take shape. I was at the casino today. There is buzz around 32 Brew Street. The chairman, new what was going on December 6th. Here he may pull up on us
and see us.
So make your plans to be with us. Dealing with Casey live from 12 to 4. Flashback Friday live with DJ Complex out on the patio from 4 to 6. And then the wake-up call, Are You Smarter Than Kevin, from 6 to 9. Your chance to win some prizes there on Trivia Night. Have a great weekend. We'll see you here Monday at 10 a.m. on the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam.